Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. You are now in the host queue.
Call and see what happens. Oh, wait a minute. He's calling in right now. Hang on.
Hello there.
Foggy, is that you?
That is me.
Fantastic. I was just about to call you. I thought you'd forgotten about our little date.
Oh, no. I did not forget.
Fantastic. Listen, I'm going to roll a little intro. I'm going to introduce you, and then we'll get started.
Okay.
It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging redneck, Mark Galar.
Good afternoon. This is Mark Galar, the host of the Tea Party Power Hour. My special guest today is Bill Bryan, a.k.a. PJ Foggy. He is the founder of a political website called PolitiJab. He's also the owner of the number one anti-birther site on the Internet. It's called TheFogbo.com. He probably holds the record for the best prank played on birthers with his Kenyan birth certificate. Please help me welcome the man that many people call the king of the anti-birthers, PJ Foggy. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Let me clear up a couple of misconceptions there. First of all, I was not one of the founders of PolitiJab, but I did found the Fogbo.
Okay.
And second of all, I did not create the what they call the Bomford fake birth certificate, but I did.
Oh, you didn't do that?
But I was part of the chain of people that we passed it to Orly Tates's investigator, Neil Sankey.
I see. Well, I think Borat would be proud of you because you won that one, to be sure. Now, one of the reasons I have you here today is I'd just like to talk to you about some of the problems that I see with the birth certificate and have you give me what is the most common anti-birther explanation for that. Now, I know there were a couple of other things that you wanted to talk about. I think you said that there was an instance of WorldNet Daily suppressing a study, and I certainly want to give you an opportunity to talk about that. And you've got some stuff on your website about the Social Security card, and you say you've disproved that theory that was put forward, I think, by Susan Daniels, a private investigator, by pulling the records of a former president. So I'd like to ask you about that as well. But first of all, let's take the birth certificate itself
sure.
that was released. Looking at this form, the first thing I see as a layperson whenever I look at it is the number one at the end of 641 is highly pixelated and looks like it was just sort of dropped in there. What's your take on why that one looks so funny?
Well, first of all, I mean, are we talking about the PDF or the birth certificate itself?
Well, we're talking about the file that the White House released.
Well, see,
over the website.
To me, see, first of all, you have to separate out. There's an actual piece of paper that is the quote unquote birth certificate, and
right.
of course, even that. I mean, let's start at the very beginning. There's a piece of paper in the vault in Hawaii that doesn't have any certifications or anything on it. That's the original birth certificate. And
That's the one that's in the binder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Supposedly it's in a binder, and I understand that Orly wants to take a look at it tomorrow, but we'll see what happens with that. But in any event,
I think that's scheduled for 10 a.m.
Right. But that's Hawaii time. I live on the East Coast, so that's more like 4 in the afternoon my time.
Right.
Anyway,
okay.
So that's the original. And then the long form is some kind of copy of that onto a piece of paper in the Department of Health, and I don't know myself if they used a camera, if they used some kind of scanner, I don't know how they got the image of what's on that binder onto a piece of paper, but what makes it a certified birth certificate is that then they take it and they put the signature of the registrar, and they put the raised seal. I'm sure you know about the raised seal.
I do.
And the reporter who was there on April 27th when the White House released it, Savannah Guthrie from NBC, she said, you know, I held it in my hand. I felt the raised seal. I took this picture of it. So that's the actual birth certificate that and I understand there, too, that the White House got, brought out.
Can I, Foggy, let me jump in about the seal real quick because I want to clear this up.
Sure.
Initially, a lot of people felt that looking at the PDF file that was released by the White House that the seal was missing. Okay? Hang on a second. Wait, let me finish.
Yeah.
But when we did our show last week, as you heard, one of my experts, Carl Denninger, came forward and said that he most definitely has found evidence of the seal, and he felt that the seal was sort of disappeared or was not so noticeable because of the compression of the document. Apparently, the White House, knowing that millions and millions of people were going to download this thing, actually compressed the document considerably so it wouldn't be so hard on their servers with all the increased number of downloads they were anticipating. But my expert tells me that the seal is there. So I just want to get that out of the way because I know there are a lot of people on the birther side who say the seal isn't there, therefore it isn't valid. I've actually now had three of my experts call me and confirm that the seal is there. They're finding what they call remnants of the seal after compression.
Yeah, it's indistinct, and, you know, I think you have to change. You know, I'm not an expert on all the graphic stuff, but
right.
And then I'm not 100% certain on how that actual PDF was made, but I know that a PDF is not a birth certificate in terms of a piece of paper. In other words, the piece of paper that Savannah Guthrie held in her hand that actually where she felt the raised seal does not have pixels. And so all the experts that talk about pixel this and pixel that and, you know, that they're not really talking about the piece of paper. They're talking about what happened to the PDF after they made it into a PDF. And I did send you earlier this week a high resolution photograph of the actual birth certificate that I found on a birther website called the Obama File.
And I did receive
and
that.
And you're right that, you know, that thing was almost 2 gigabytes of, two megabytes. It takes a long time to download that and look at it on a browser. And the PDF itself is optimized for looking at on the web. And so that changes a lot of the pixels as I understand it.
Okay, let's get back to when we talk about the actual birth certificate. We're talking about a photograph of one of the copies that was sent to the White House from Hawaii. We're not talking about the original aged birth certificate in the binder.
About a photograph. I mean, it is a piece of paper somewhere because, like I said, Savannah Guthrie said she held it in her hand. So I think that
absolutely.
Is a piece of paper. Somewhere with no pixels on it, and then you have the photograph of it that's very high resolution, and then you have the however they made it into a PDF, and I know the PDF. You know, we've got a lot of experts that WorldNet Daily found on Adobe software, but according to the PDF, it was not made with any Adobe program. It was made with a Macintosh program called Quartz. I'm not entirely 100% clear on is did they put it into a scanner and then use Quartz on the piece of paper itself, or did they take a picture of the piece of paper, turn it into a JPEG, and run that through Quartz to make it into a PDF? But the whole thing about the PDF, you know, is really kind of, in my mind, that's really an irrelevant thing to be looking at because the PDF is not the actual birth certificate. you know.
Well, first of all, we're in agreement on that. I think the only difference is that I'm not willing to settle for the copies that went to the White House. I think the best way to do it would be to have, and I think you've pointed this out on your site as well, one of the best things to do would be to have a true forensic document expert look at the original in Hawaii. That would settle all of this once and for all.
Well, the problem with that is that Hawaii has privacy laws, and they're going to enforce their privacy laws. And I know Orly Tates is in Hawaii, and last night Jerome Corsi said, or yesterday he said that he's sending some heavy hitter Hawaiian lawyers after, you know, to help her out. But if you've read about any of that on Fogbo, you know that Orly did not serve the subpoena properly, and she did not give notice to the opposing counsel, and basically she's not very effective at lawyering.
So you believe that when she gets there, she will not be allowed to see the document based on a technicality?
Well, yeah, and it's not, you know, I mean, there's a reason for technicalities. And in this particular case, one of the technicalities is, she has a lawsuit against the Social Security Administration, and the Social Security Administration is being represented by an attorney, and the attorney is entitled to know what's going on in the case, and Orly has not even notified her opposing counsel that she's in Hawaii, or that she expects this birth certificate to be produced. When she created this birth certificate, this subpoena for, and by the way, the lawsuit in Washington D.C. against the Social Security Administration is about President Obama's Social Security number. It has nothing to do with the birth certificate. And when she created this subpoena or obtained the subpoena, which apparently she got a blank subpoena signed by the clerk of court of the Hawaii court. She did not send it to her opposing counsel in the lawsuit that the subpoena is supposed to be issued in, and she did not serve it on Loretta Fuddy, who she expects to show up for the, you know, with the birth certificate. She served it on the Attorney General of Hawaii, Jill Nagamini. I think that's how you say her name. Nagamine,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of lawyering, it's my understanding that the state of Hawaii did not exercise their option to respond within, was it 14 or 15 days? What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think that, you know, they did respond to an earlier version of the subpoena, but this one, you know, the people that are on the Fogbo, the currently practicing lawyers that I deal with, they're saying there's no real need to respond to a subpoena that hasn't been served. In other words, if she wanted me to testify to something, she'd have to actually serve it on me. If she wants Loretta Fuddy to testify to something or to appear at a deposition, she has to serve it on Loretta Fuddy. And instead of doing either of those things, what she did was she sent a copy to the Attorney General of Hawaii, and I guess she got a return receipt on that, but she hasn't made any attempt at all to serve the person who she wants to show up. So we're pretty confident that that she's going to be escorted off the premises if she tries to force, you know, any kind of compliance with a subpoena that has never been validly served. And we don't think that Jerome Corsi's attorneys are going to be able to change that much. In fact, we're pretty sure that if Jerome Corsi actually did hire a law firm and they have some competent attorneys, And Orly shows them what she's done, they're going to say, well, you know, you haven't actually served the person you expect to show up for the subpoena. So,
okay. Well, we've got your prediction, and so we'll take a like everyone else. We'll be taking a close look at that on Monday, and we'll see if you're right.
You know, we have our own radio show on Blog Talk Radio, and we've scheduled a show for tomorrow night in case so we can get a report on what actually did happen, because we're going to have somebody from FOGBO is going to be there and observe the proceedings. So
now I know that you normally go on Thursday nights, and I'll give you a plug. What's it called? Reality Check Radio?
Yeah, Reality Check Radio, and it's Blog Talk Radio /RCR. There's a link to it on every page on the FOGBO forum, and actually there's a link to it on our homepage too. So it's not hard to find. And like I said, we're going to have somebody from FOGBO is going to be there to observe what happens. We're just like everybody else. We make predictions. We have a pretty good record of our predictions coming true, but we'll have to see what really happens. It'll be interesting. The only possibility of that show not actually going forward would be if whatever happens is just too boring to even be bothered talking about. But there is apparently another thing going on in the birther world, which is apparently you've heard about the Birther Summit that's going to take place.
Yeah.
The guy who runs the Birther Summit has been saying that he's got a huge announcement.
That's Dean Haskins?
Dean Haskins, yes. He was a member of the FOGBO for a while, coincidentally, But he says he's got a huge announcement coming on Monday, so we'll see what happens tomorrow with that, too.
Okay. A lot of huge announcements coming.
Yes,
in
yes, yes.
Now, I know you said you're not a computer expert, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I would like to ask you about some more of what I believe are anomalies in this document, okay?
Okay.
And when I say document, I'm talking about the PDF file.
Right.
Let's talk about a couple of – are you need a moment to adjust?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, I thought you dropped the phone.
No.
Okay. One of the things that people like to suggest is that perhaps the PDF file that was released, and this is why people are so focused on the pixels and so forth, is actually a compilation of maybe as many as three different birth certificates that was put together. One of the things they point to, and I know you don't have it in front of you, or maybe you do, but it's box number three. Box number three, where the pixels are identical for the box beside single and the box beside twin. And yet the third box seems a little larger and it's touching the line, which I believe is also true in your high-resolution photo. And I'm wondering why a typesetter back in 1961 would have done such sloppy work with that third box. And I'll just go ahead and tell you that the theory is that this came from the Nordic twins, that the twins box was initially had an X in it, and there had to be some juggling around of the boxes, and that the reason the third box doesn't have identical pixels is that there was no reason to change anything in there. Your thoughts?
Well, you got to remember that the way understand this much. The way a computer program makes a PDF out of a JPEG or out of a scan of an actual document is with algorithms and if it finds two things that are virtually identical, it makes them virtually identical. This one apparently makes layers, and you've seen the layers, but you've also seen, I think, the report I sent you that was commissioned by WorldNet Daily from an actual computer forensic analyst who's actually testified in court. But in any event, I mean, the bottom line on that is you've also seen the high-resolution photograph of the actual piece of paper. And what I don't understand and really have trouble conceiving is that somebody would, like you said, take all these different documents, the Nordyke twins and maybe some other birth certificates, and basically put together a PDF that has the exact same information about President Obama's birth that the JPEG has, which is a high-resolution JPEG, which has no layers. It has none of the anomalies that people are finding in the PDF that was optimized. I mean, it just seems to me that even when you're talking about pixels, the more accurate representation of what the real piece of paper is the JPEG that's a high-resolution photograph. And I, like I said, I found that on a birther website. And, you know, the, I mean, the bottom line is, was President Obama born in Honolulu, Hawaii on August 4th, 1961? And
I agree. That is the bottom line.
You know, the photograph of the actual piece of paper says it was. And when you look at the photograph and compare it to the PDF, you know, yes, the PDF is much more low resolution. And yes, the PDF went through some algorithms that, you know, changed boxes around and made white backgrounds and God knows what all. But the PDF. The PDF is not the birth certificate. And so I think, you know, all these analyses of the PDF are pretty much irrelevant to what the actual piece of paper that's got the raised seal that Savannah Guthrie took a photo of. And I can't understand, like I said, why, you know, they're passing around this piece of paper that does not have pixels because it's an actual certified birth certificate, and they're passing it around and letting people take pictures of it, and then somehow or other they take that and turn it into a PDF with all the exact same information: the father's name, the mother's name. I know you have a problem with the father's race, the date of birth, the time of birth. I mean, they pretty much made a PDF. If they were going to forge a PDF, wouldn't they change something as far as the actual information contained on the birth certificate? This is what I can't.
Well, let me jump in there. First
sure.
of all, the reason there aren't any anomalies in the JPEG file is because the JPEG file is a flattened image. It's one image. It doesn't contain layers. The PDF file that came from the White House, once you unlock it, if you know how, contains many layers, and it's on these different layers that various suspicious things start to show themselves. And, you know, the reason, it's not so much just the low resolution quality of the PDF, it's what items are on different layers and how critical those different items are to the Obama birth narrative.
Well,
so
I've seen that analysis, and one of the layers is like part of the name Dunham, where she signed her last, you know, her middle name, and
right,
and that the D is one layer, and the rest of the name is another layer, and but if you look, you know, at the flattened JPEG, I mean, if you look at the piece of paper itself, the D is somewhat lighter in color. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, the pen was not making as difficult of contact. You know, I'm just saying, all these anomalies on the PDF to me are all completely irrelevant, because the only thing that matters is the piece of paper itself. And
I haven't seen the piece of paper, and neither of you. You've seen a picture of it that was taken by Guthrie.
Right.
And I also want to take issue with the fact that you said it was passed around. As far as I know, the only person who touched it and took a picture of it was Guthrie. Was there someone else I don't know about?
I thought she was one of several people that touched. No, I really don't. If anybody else touched it, I don't have a name, but I know she said she felt the raised seal. And of course, you know, when you talk about what makes a birth certificate, the State Department has rules about, you know, what they will accept in order to give you a passport. The Social Security Administration has rules about what they will take in order to give you a Social Security number on a birth certificate. And all of them, the main things that make it, you know, is was it issued by the state? Does it have the registrar's signature, even with a stamp? And does it have the certified seal, you know, a raised seal, or it can be a colored seal? And nowadays, actually, for a State Department birth certificate, you have to have the names of the parents on there. Those are the four requirements. Now, I have a good friend here in Raleigh that she's going on a cruise in the Caribbean, and she pulled out her birth certificate and said, is this a legal birth certificate? And she pulled out this birth certificate she had gotten in Connecticut in 1986, and I'm telling you, the thing was about the size of a credit card, and it didn't have her parents' name on it. It did have a registrar's signature. It did have a raised seal, It did have a raised seal. It had been issued by the state of Connecticut. And I told her, well, if you need a passport to go where you're going, now that it's past April 1st, 2011, you are actually going to have to get a new one. But, I've seen birth certificates from the state of Washington that'll fit in your wallet, that you really don't need a lot of information. At the Fogbow and at our predecessor, PolitiJab, we've never accepted that the short form birth certificate was not perfectly legitimate.
Well, as far as the certificate of live birth, which I believe is what the short form is called, it's my understanding that at some point in time, even within the state of Hawaii, that didn't necessarily qualify as a full birth certificate, and that those rules have since been changed. But what do you know about that?
No, that's dead wrong. They've been. I mean, the short form birth certificate has been around since about 2001. It's always been accepted as a perfectly legal birth certificate. If it's got the raised seal and the registrar's stamp and you actually pay to get a certified copy of it, it's basically, the data has all been put into a computer and they print it out using the computer. And I've heard, Phil Berg, the birther lawyer out in Philadelphia, is really fond of running around saying that you couldn't even get into Little League using one of those birth certificates. The truth is that the current Little League champions of the United States are from Hawaii, and all of those kids use the short form birth certificate. And I've got the Little League regulations right here, and all it says is that it needs to be issued by federal, state, or provincial registrars. It needs to list the date of birth and the location.
I'm willing to accept that the baseball league accepts COLB.
The COLB is a perfectly legal birth certificate for any and all purposes.
I tell you what, let me get back with you on that, because that wasn't a topic I was going to talk about on the show. But my understanding is that people have screen captures from various departments within the Hawaiian government where they specified that they wanted a long form for various purposes. And let me just, you and I are having a nice, polite conversation.
I know about
let
that
me.
Too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then go ahead and address it if you know about it. That's fine.
Oh, sure. The Hawaii has a program. This is one of the examples I used to use when I went around to birther sites and get myself kicked off. The Hawaii has a program where they sort of discriminate in favor of people who are of native Hawaiian bloodlines. You have to be at least 50% native Hawaiian, and that doesn't mean born there. That means ethnic native Hawaiians. Like the natives that lived there when Captain Cook discovered Hawaii. And I think that gives you the right to own some land, which I think, if I went to Hawaii, I could lease land, but I don't think I could actually own it. I'm not exactly sure, but it's a program to give benefits to people who live in Hawaii. And they used to put on the website that they wanted a copy of your long-form birth certificate because it contains more information about, you've seen the difference between the COLB and the long form birth certificate. It contains more information. When we saw the website that said, we want the long form birth certificate, somebody from Fogbow, actually it was PolitiJab back in those days. Fogbow, you remember, that didn't really open until September of 2010. When it all started, it started as PolitiJab, and it was started by two guys that basically were just creating a place. We thought maybe we'd get 15 people as actual members when we first started it. And they eventually...
I don't mean to cut you off, but what you're telling me is that except for some very specified programs that showed favoritism towards somebody of a particular bloodline, there was no other instance.
Well, and even, even then, we called them up and we said they don't really give long-form birth certificates. How can you still be asking for the long-form birth certificate? And they actually responded to that by changing the website and saying, if you have a long-form birth certificate, we'd prefer to see that. But the website of the program now that discriminates in favor of Hawaiians actually says, you know, the Department of Health doesn't give out long-form birth certificates anymore. And
Let me finish that thought.
What I used to ask people is this. Suppose I'm a native Hawaiian, and I actually am ethnic 50% or more native Hawaiian, but I don't happen to have a birth certificate around. Here's the program that really would like to help me. They discriminate in favor of ethnic Hawaiians. They want to help me qualify for the program. But their answer is that, no, I can't get a long-form birth certificate. And so I would ask, so how did President Obama, who only lived there a few years out of his life and has basically lived in Los Angeles and Chicago and Boston and New York and 4 years in Indonesia, how does he, and there, nobody's trying to help him qualify for this program, how does he get a long-form birth certificate? We got that answered in April. When it turned out that what he does is to get a long-form birth certificate is he's the president of the United States, and if he asks for a waiver, he gets it. So,
well, and I think there is some discretion given to the head of the DOH, is there not?
There is, I guess, but you know that Terry Lakin, Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin, has a daughter who was born in Hawaii. And one time his brother Greg was on a radio show, Andrea Shea King, Blog Talk Radio Show, and I called in and I said, you know, how come if he really wanted President Obama to produce a long-form birth certificate, why didn't he go get a long-form birth certificate for his own daughter who was born in Hawaii? And, I mean, that would have made his appeal a lot more credible if he could hold up the long-form birth certificate he got for his own daughter and say, look, I got one. Why can't President Obama get one? And believe it or not, Greg Lakin said he tried to get a long-form birth certificate for his own daughter, and he wasn't able to get one.
Okay, now I am going to jump in and tell you that there are people who have apparently gotten them very recently as a few weeks ago, and they're waving around the receipts from the state of Hawaii showing that they paid, I think, $19.99 or $20 for it, and they're saying, here's my long form, and I got it a few weeks ago, and here's the receipt and the date on the receipt to prove that Hawaii is still giving these things out. What's your take on that?
Have they used courts to make a PDF out of it so that we could see if it makes layers?
I think the White House has an option on that procedure.
I haven't seen one. We've seen at FOGBO, you know, we pay an awful lot of attention to this, and we have a lot of professionals that really they spend a lot of time thinking about this and working on it. And the closest we have seen is we saw some kind of a long-form birth certificate that was documented a birth at the Army Hospital there in Hawaii, the details are escaping me, but that's the only one that we've seen. And then there was some serious question about whether the year 2001 had been manipulated somehow so that it said 2011 as the issue date. And so we haven't really, as far as I know, we have not actually seen a birth certificate from Hawaii that is an actual long-form birth certificate. But I'd be glad to see one, and if you have one, email it to me, and I'll be glad to put it on the FOGBO and let people take a look at it, because, you know, I'm only expert in, you know, this and that and very little, actually. I tell you what my expertise is I know how to run a forum.
is that a shot at my inability to run a forum?
No, No, it's really, it's an explanation. You know, like I said, I mean, you know, I don't practice law anymore, so I'm rusty on the law, and I'm really not an IT guy. Although I have a good amount of expertise with computers, but I'm really not an IT guy. I'm not a computer graphics guy. What I managed to do was, I was asked to become administrator of PolitiJab, because I was really working on trying to learn how to run this software called PHPBB, which runs our board. And I became pretty good at it. And so, the owners asked me to take over the technical parts of just running that thing. And so I happened to be, in the right place at the right time when we made the decision that we were gonna, the owner of PolitiJab, did become sort of tired of following the birthers and was not happy that he had a forum that, you know, all we did really was follow the birthers, and he kind of wanted, to be free of it. You know, he's not alone. We've had people since the very beginning that sort of drifted away eventually, and you know, some of them have come back, some of them haven't, you know, whatever. But, you know, when the decision was made to create a new forum and move the discussions about the birthers to the new forum, then I happen to be the one that knew enough about the software, and that's how I got involved in you know, I never really did have any specific strong desire to be an administrator or to run a forum, but you know, I had just happened to be in the right place at the right time. So,
okay.
Clearly not a knock on you. You know,
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I try to be fair.
You run a radio show, as far as I know.
Right. Yeah.
And actually, one of the reasons I agreed to do this show was I listened to some old archived versions of your show, and I thought, you know, this guy does a pretty class job of interviewing and so forth. So I decided I would come on the show, and you know, I turned down some other people who wanted to interview me. So,
well, I appreciate that, and I think we talked about this when we spoke on the phone last week. That you know, neither one of us are into screening.
Right.
We may have differences of opinion, but we can certainly agree to disagree agreeably, and I do respect that. And by the way, I've invited other people who were not in agreement with birthers on the show, and they consistently turned me down, so I appreciate you coming on.
Their mistake, you know, what can I say? I mean, I have a sort of a reputation as being very harsh on the birthers, and there have been times when I have actually, you know, lost my temper, But mostly, you know, I'm known as a pretty nice guy. You know, I own a retail business, and I would not be successful in that business if I couldn't be pleasant all day in my shop. So,
I believe you told me that you run a flower shop, and I've never known a mean person to run a flower shop.
It wouldn't be very successful if I was mean and trying to run a flower shop. No, you know. And actually, I have another business that I'm not going to make public, but
that's fine.
Yeah, flower shop. My lovely wife talked me into doing a franchise deal with the flower shop, and now we're no longer part of a franchise. We run our own shop, you know, I'm sort of the guy of the shop. I can't arrange a vase of flowers, and I'm allowed to talk about what kind of flowers we have and what do they cost and how do you take care of them. But if somebody says, "Does this color go with this color?" the ladies will tell me to go sit down and do some more paperwork, or you know. So and like I said, I kind of broke away from day-to-day participation in the shop. I let the ladies do that. They're the ones that are good at it, and I come in on the weekends and do the books and I come in during the week and fix computers if I need to. I do the bookkeeping. I run the storage unit. You know, I reach things on tall shelves.
Well, you know,
I'm not
a computer
florist.
Okay, and I'm not a florist or a computer expert, and
yeah.
I guess that's something we have in common. But let me jump back to the birth certificate. Let me talk about
sure.
at least two things that don't require a degree in computer science. You mentioned that birthers have a problem with the term African being there. Now, if I were born in Africa, would my race be African too? I mean, that's clearly a mistake, is it not?
No, I don't think so, and I think it's because... Now, this is just speculation. I mean, I wasn't there at the time.
Okay.
But, you know, we actually have a member of the FOGBO, the Joint Politijab, fairly early, who's a lawyer in Nigeria. And,
mm-hmm.
and he said that if you were a black African and you went anywhere in the world and people asked you what your race was, that you were an African and the white people in Africa were Europeans, and that it was a self-identified thing that just naturally, if you asked Barack Obama Sr., the father, what race are you, he would look at you and say, I'm an African. And it was, a self-identification thing. Now, like I said, I don't have proof of that, but that's the explanation that we all think makes the most sense. And by the way, this guy from Nigeria said that in 1961, Kenya was about as full of racial prejudice as North Carolina was in 1961, and that it was very unlike Hawaii, which has always been kind of a racially diverse place, and everybody's kind of proud to be part of, you know, a really diverse society, that in 1961 that if Barack Obama had showed up with a white woman who was, a mother of his child, that he would have suffered all kinds of discrimination from Africans and from the British, who were still in charge of running Nigeria Kenya in 1961.
Is that the official explanation for why he left the relationship?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, do you see that as being the valid explanation as to why Barack Obama Sr. was so quick to leave the relationship?
It's possible. I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what was going on. You know, he left to go to Harvard. He apparently fell in love with another, or at least got together with another woman in Harvard named, the only name I remember is her first name was Ruth. He married her and took her back to Kenya with him, and she apparently lived out the rest of her days in Kenya. So it's hard. It's really, you know, I don't really worry too much about, you know, how that happened. And, of course, we know now that that Barack Obama Sr. was actually in summer school during the summer of 1961, and that the summer school didn't end until, strangely enough, August 4th, the day President Obama was born. And so... that was found out by a guy named Belinsky, Eugene Belinsky, and he announced it on a birther radio show. Now, hang on a second. I've got that here. Hang on a second. But, he was on the Peter Boyle's radio show on March 10th of this year, and he announced that he had checked with the University of Hawaii registrar and that President Obama's dad was enrolled in the 1961 summer session, which ended on August 4th. And so, but then you heard Jerome Corsi on one of your radio shows told you that he thought Ann Dunham had gone by herself to Kenya. I don't know if you remember him saying that, but...
Well, he also suggested that looking at enrollment records at the University of, was it Seattle? She had enrolled there within a few weeks of Barack Obama's birth.
Yeah, there he's dead wrong, because she did enroll, but it was a correspondence course. And if you look at the actual records, And we've analyzed those. You know, we thought that was fascinating when they first came out, and we at the Fogbo we looked at that, and it turns out that she took a correspondence course, but she did not actually travel and go to the University of Washington until
Washington,
spring of 62.
You wrote that down. Now, at what point when she arrived there, she took night classes, did she not?
I don't remember the specifics, but we can look. Those records are out there.
Hang on just a second, okay?
Sure.
Hang on just a second. I was having a technical difficulty.
All right.
You were sounding like Mickey Mouse for a second. All right, go ahead.
Me?
Go ahead. We're addressing.
I'm supposed to sound like Foghorn Leghorn, you know.
Well, that's one of my favorite characters. So, before we close out the show, I want to get into the Fogbo Foghorn thing and find out where all that came from.
The truth is, I was foggy for 5 years before I came. You know, before I ever came into the birther. You know, I was foggy on five or six different forums since way back when, because I have the loud voice that you can hear. And because I live in the South, and you're right, he was always one of my favorite cartoon characters when I was a kid, and so.
Hey Fog, hang on a second. I'm still having a technical problem.
All right.
Just hang on 1 second. I can deal with it, but I'll let you know as soon as it's been fixed.
Okay.
So I pre-record these things. Okay, can you hear me now?
Sure.
Okay, hang on 1 second.
And can you hear me now?
You're a little bit more muted, but I can still hear you.
You can still hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna use this this phone.
Oh, now I lost you.
Okay. Now can you hear me?
Yeah, now you're back.
All right, okay. I've just got a standby line going in case this one goes bad again. I'll just jump on the second line.
Okay.
All right, now, I think as far as the term African is concerned, that's one of those areas where we're just going to have to agree to disagree. I mean, the birthers look at it as a 21st century forger trying to impose 21st century political correctness on a mid-20th century document. You look at it as a self-identifier. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, so we're going to move on. Now, also, with regard to the lining up of the document, somebody has pointed out that if you pull birth certificates from that time period, because they were typed with a basket-type typewriter or a bow-type typewriter, that the left margins are all lined up. They'll point out one of the first things you do with the typewriter in those days is you'd set your tabs, set your margins. But with this particular document, it tends to jump all over the place a little bit. There isn't that solid left line where you can see all the tabs lining up or all the words lining up with the left margin. There is no amount of OCR scanning or compression that explains that. What's your take on why this particular document looks so different from others from that time period in terms of not lining up with the left margin?
Well, you know, the original record, the birth record, that's there in Hawaii that was made in 1961, there's actually three different components to it. One is the pre-printed stuff that was made on a printing press. Then there was the typed portion, and then there was the signature portion.
I'm talking about the typed.
Right.
I
understand. I'm just making sure we're all on the same page on that one.
Okay.
And as far as the type, I used to type on old typewriters like that, and they, you know, depending on the typewriter itself, you can get a lot of variation in what actually happens. You know, in those days, when you're typing, if you accidentally hit two keys at the same time, it would mean that two metal bars with the typeface. You know how you're not.
I'm almost 50. I've typed on one of those.
Okay.
I know what they are.
I know what
you're going to say. They would lock together if you hit them at the same time.
Yeah, they could lock together. You could get times where one would hit and then the other would hit before the platen, which is the roller, had time to shift over. You know, that it was really difficult to be to type perfectly with one of those typewriters. And
I agree with you. I agree with you, but we're not talking about a one or two space jump. We'd have to have about a 10 space jump.
Well, in the bottom line is I can't explain that, and I don't really need to, in my mind, I don't need to try, because the bottom line for me is, who is the ultimate authority on what is a birth certificate? You know, the ultimate authority on what's authentic and what's a not authentic birth certificate is the state that issued the birth certificate. And I know this is another area where we're going to have to agree to disagree, because the birthers seem to think that the Hawaii government is in the pocket of President Obama. I even had a guy one time try to tell me that if they hadn't gone along with it, that he would have dropped a nuke on Honolulu and Pearl Harbor, just like 1941. But you know, I'm
look. There are fringe people on both sides of this argument.
Yeah,
that's not really representative of our side.
You would have to have a huge conspiracy for the Department of Hawaii to give you that statement that I sent you, the press release, and what it said in there was that. Was Loretta Fuddy, who is the health director, said, "I've seen the original records. I attest to the authenticity of the certified copies. It further proves the fact that he was born in Hawaii." And you know, that's pretty much going to be, you know, the answer no matter what happens. And in other words, if there ever was a birther lawsuit that made it to trial in a court, federal or state, in any court in the United States of America, the birth certificate, once they show that has a certified seal and that it's got the signature of the registrar, a court has to rule that that's a legitimate birth certificate because it was issued by the state. And, you know, there's even a provision in the United States Constitution called the Full Faith and Credit Clause that says that every state has to give full faith and credit to the official records of every other state. And that if Hawaii says this is our birth certificate and the president was born in Hawaii on August 4th, 1961, a judge in Oklahoma or a judge in Texas cannot say, "Well, I'm not accepting that. I need to see better proof." You know, and I suppose you know, as long as I'm talking a little bit about the law of birth certificates, a birth certificate is hearsay evidence. You know, it's not a witness testifying in court that you can cross-examine on what their personal observations were. But there's a well-known exception to the hearsay rule for official records, and all you really have to do is prove that a birth certificate is an official record. And the way you do that is you say, "Look, here's the raised seal, here's the registrar's signature." And so, I know it's been frustrating for the birthers that they've never actually gotten to go to a trial on any of these issues, they're not huge fans of the standing argument, although the truth is that standing was invented to keep leftists out of court and not right-wingers. You know, the founding case is called Lujan versus Defenders of Wildlife, and it's basically...
We're getting into detail that I think is... We're going off on
I'm just saying, legally, there's only one real authority on whether that birth certificate is legal, and it's the government of Hawaii, and the government of Hawaii has consistently said since 2008 that that is the legal birth certificate. The gold is legal, and the long form is legal.
Well, forgive me for not being someone who believes everything government officials tell us.
I understand. I understand that.
I mean, yeah, certainly, I mean, you know, George W. Bush said there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Remember that?
Yeah, and I didn't believe that. But I don't believe, you know, I mean, depending on which birther you talk to, look at who would have to be in on it for President Obama to not be eligible. All 535 members of the Congress that was, you know, the 110th Congress, all 535 members of the 111th Congress that's in office right now, because they still don't have a congressman who's willing to stand up and say he's not eligible, all of the Supreme Court judges, hundreds and hundreds of other judges around the country, because as you know, well, I guess you don't know. Corsi told you that there had been more than 20 birther lawsuits. We keep an official scorecard, and there are...
Actually, I was just about to bring that up. You brought that up in an email to me.
Yeah. We keep an...
So go ahead. How many are there? How many have there been?
73, I believe, is the total. Might be 74 with this, the Tates versus Astru that Orley's in Hawaii on, and then of course she's claimed she's filed another one, which would be number 75 maybe, that called Tates versus Rumler, where she's suing the president's new White House counsel to get.
How much money would you say has been spent by Obama's side showing up at these things? I know most of them are over pretty quick, but there has to be some.
This is going to be a shock to you. Let's take one of the first cases. D'Onofrio versus Wells, Leo D'Onofrio. He sued the Secretary of State of New Jersey. And President Obama never had an attorney in that case. The Attorney General's Office of New Jersey defended it. Here's another one, was Keyes versus Bowen. That one was filed by Orley Tates and Gary Creep in California, and it was against Deborah Bowen, the Secretary of State of California. It was defended by the Secretary of State of California. So it didn't cost the federal government a dime, didn't cost President Obama a dime.
Okay, let me cut to the chase. Of all 70 actions, how much money has Barack Obama spent approximately in your opinion?
We estimate less than $20,000. He did hire some lawyers to file a motion to dismiss in Berg versus Obama, the very first case, and that was granted. And Berg appealed it to the Supreme Court, and they didn't even bother filing an opposing brief in the Supreme Court, and it was upheld by the Supreme Court. And then the only other case we know of where President Obama actually had to hire a lawyer out of his own pocket was Hollister v. Sotoro, the one where Colonel Hollister in Washington, D.C., and that was also one of Phil Berg's cases. All the other cases, now you understand that one of the big cases is, I guess right now it's being called Barnett versus Obama, and it's the one that was in David Carter's court in California, and now it's up in front of the Ninth Circuit, and Orley argued the appeal in front of the Ninth Circuit. We're all still waiting for a decision. That was handled by the U.S. attorneys, but the thing about U.S. attorneys is they get a salary per year, and they make the exact same salary no matter what case they work on. So it's really not costing any additional taxpayer money for them to work on one of these eligibility cases, because they do draw the same salary whether they work on one or not. And same with the judge. The judge gets a salary, and he gets the same salary regardless of what case he works on. As far as we're concerned, these cases take away the U.S. attorneys and the judges and the court time from legitimate cases, We don't think any of these cases have any legitimacy, but basically, as far as you know, using taxpayer money to, and you know, the $2 million figure that you hear from birthers all the time is just completely false. And I know.
I think that's based on invoicing to Bowers Law Firm.
But see,
from Bowers.
But Bowers Law Firm handled a ton of other matters, and all Bauer really did in terms of working on President Obama's cases was he wrote two motions to dismiss, one in the case Berg v. Obama and the other one in Hollister v. Sotoro, and both of those are about 5 or 6 pages. I specifically remember the one from Sotoro because he said that, you know, that was the one where Berg had this bizarre legal theory called interpleader, and Bauer said he was trying to shoehorn an odd set of facts into an interpleader, and I thought that was just wonderful that he used the word shoehorn as a verb. But but yeah, you know, to write up a motion to dismiss costs maybe, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 for if you're really using a really high power attorney, and they spend a little bit of time polishing. I mean, they weren't 6 or 7 pages each. And the rest of the money from Bauer's firm was because was the stuff that, you know, Bauer's doing right now. And I heard Jerry Corsi tell you on the radio, because, you know, I've been listening to some archive stuff of Corsi on your show, and he said that there was an executive order allowing Bauer to work on the eligibility cases. I don't think that's true. I'd love to see such an executive order if it exists. I kind of think.
Well, let's look into that.
I kind of think that came from the same place that Jerry Corsi's mole in the Department of Hawaii came from, which is he kind of made it up out of whole cloth.
Well, let's. I mean, obviously, there's a record of executive orders that either does or does not exist.
Yeah.
I mean, let's explore that, and
yeah.
Maybe, you know, here's an idea. I know Corsi was a little disappointed that you didn't call into his interview the other day on Ed Hale's show.
Oh.
Maybe I could have you and Corsi on my show at the same time, and you could hash that out.
I'm not a huge fan of Jerry Corsi, and I think he's one of the most dishonest people in America. And of course, he's lied to you, and you should know about that by now. With this thing about the mole in Hawaii, which allegedly told him in February that the new birth certificate had been released, but he didn't tell anybody except Joe Farah at WorldNet Daily, and they decided that they were going to, you know, I mean, that's a huge thing if they found out that a birth certificate had been forged. And
I believe what Corsi said is Farah refused to run it because he didn't have 2 sources.
Okay. But look at what they do run. I mean, they run, you know, stuff where their source is me. That was, but in any event.
Is that you saying that you won't come on the show with Corsi?
Here's a good question for Jerry Corsi. What did the mole do on April 25th of this year? You know, because that was a big day at the Department of Health of Hawaii. That was the day President Obama's lawyer showed up to get a copy of the long-form birth certificate. They all went down in a pack down to the vault and pulled out the binder. They used the binder to make a couple of long-form birth certificates, and here's this high-power lawyer from Perkins Coie that was going to take it over. And you know, it's really impossible for me to imagine all that happening without it being a big deal in the Department of Health. And the mole, if there was a mole, really should have called up Jerry Corsi and said, now they're actually going to produce it. And wouldn't that have been a scoop if there was such a mole, if Jerry Corsi said, in the next couple of days, President Obama's going to let out this long-form birth certificate. The other really funny thing, and I'm talking about last Sunday's show.
Well, let me say this: okay. If you want that question asked of him, I'm inviting you to come on the show and ask him yourself.
I'll think about it.
I think I could arrange that.
You know that Jerry Corsi published a photo of my kids in World Net Daily that he had no business in the world publishing, and one of the ironclad policies we have at Fogbo is leave the kids out of it. We don't talk about Orly's kids. We don't talk about Jerry Corsi's kids if he has any. You know, leave the kids out of it. And there was a picture of my two children at the top of the story. He also said I was disbarred, which is a complete and utter lie. And he looked at my state bar record that does not use the word disbarred anywhere, and they never even suggested that they were thinking about disbarring. I got into a little bit of trouble with the state bar. I was put on probation. I decided I was going to find something else to do for a living because it's a very stressful job anyway, and I was probably heading toward an early heart attack, and so I pulled the plug and got out. But I was not disbarred, and nobody ever even suggested disbarring me. And for Jerry Corsi to write in the headline that I'm a disbarred attorney is absolute slander, and if he hadn't done me such a huge favor by writing that, I would be going after him. You know, the bottom line was he helped my traffic at the Fogbo enormously. We had a spike of usage. All kinds of people who never heard of me joined the Fogbo. I had this huge outpouring of support from people who actually know me. And so in the long run, he did me a favor. And then second of all, I actually kind of, exacted my revenge because he used me as a source for a story that's just complete nonsense about this multimillionaire named James Johnson being our boss over at Fogbo when, you know, we never heard of James Johnson until Corsi and Ed Hale brought him up, so.
Is that the former Fannie Mae guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, real quick, let me do something because
he has no connection at all with the Fogbo, and I know it probably doesn't bother Jerry Corsi because, you know, he's not real big on journalistic ethics, but you know, he used me, you know, his fourth story in the series was where he relied on me as the source for confirming that James Johnson was our boss, and so I did trick him into publishing a fake story, which any other responsible, you know, newspaper man would want to crawl under a rock after that happened to him.
Is that the story where you supposedly said that everybody knew who our boss was 2 years ago?
Yeah, I decided to run with it. You know, first of all, once Jerry Corsi writes something in World Net Daily, you're not going to convince a birther that it didn't happen, you know. I mean,
wait a minute. You're judging us, and I don't appreciate it because if you had stopped talking a little bit sooner, what I was going to say is that I heard the conflicting reports about your disbarment. I decided to research the matter myself, and you were not disbarred.
Right. I was
okay,
not.
Now hang on. Now, I did see, just like you admitted to a few seconds ago, there was a little bit of a problem there, and you did, you know, decide to quit practicing law and give up your license.
Right.
But I have no way of knowing whether or not you would have been disbarred if you stayed in, and the fact is you were not disbarred. Okay,
right.
You were not, and I'm a birther, and
okay.
I know what was said elsewhere,
you know,
and I am saying
bit,
for the
maybe, you're a little bit different case, but in general, when you look around the web, I mean, I had people that there were birthers that looked at that picture of me and my kids and decided I was a child molester and wrote that on the internet. You know,
well, that's disgusting. That's disgusting.
I agree, but that's the kind of thing that happened. So anyway, like I said, I decided that there was no point in denying the story. That it actually gave us a little bit of additional credibility. I mean, imagine if a guy who had $100 million and was really connected with the top levels of Washington was actually involved in the Fogbo. You would think that, we'd have all kinds of resources available to us that we really don't. You know, the whole
sounds like the kind of,
the software
sounds
that
like the
runs,
kind of friend we could all stand to have.
Yeah, the software that runs Fogbo is free. Free of charge. It's open source software. I think I paid $125 for hosting for a year, and I took that out of my own pocket. And nobody gives any of us paychecks, and we're not connected with anybody in Washington. And And in fact, every once in a while, I gripe about the fact that President Obama comes to Raleigh every once in a while, and he really needs to come into my flower shop and thank me for all the work I've been doing for him for the past 2.5 years. And you know, as far as I know, he has no idea I even exist.
Well, maybe if they decide to celebrate Christmas at the White House next year, he can buy all his poinsettias from you. let me ask you, because we're getting a little bit away, but yeah,
sure.
I have no problem with that. You wanted to clear the record on something, I'm perfectly
sure.
Willing to let you do that, because and I appreciate you saying I'm a little bit different, but that's true in a lot of ways regarding political ideology as well. But let me ask you one thing. Now, you talk about the state of Hawaii being the ultimate source on this. One of the things that bothers me deeply, and anybody in my listenership right now who wants to check it out can go to teapartypowerhour.com/Fukino, is that Dr. Fukino, when she was head of the Hawaii Department of Health, said that she had seen the document and it was half typed and it was half written. The document is clearly not half typed and half written. So what's your take on Fukino getting it wrong?
Well, I think she was just kind of, I don't know how to describe it. She wasn't being completely precise in her words, but clearly there is handwriting on it, and where you'd expect handwriting to be, the doctor's signature, the mom's signature. There is typing on it where you'd expect the typing to be. There is printing where you'd expect the printing to be. I mean, it really does look an awful lot like the Nordyke birth certificate. And,
except for the left margin not being lined up properly.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, what the explanation for that is. But
fair enough.
But you know,
Mrs.
Nordyke is still alive, or at least she was in 2009, and she went on Ed Hale's radio show, as a matter of fact, and she remembers Stanley Ann Dunham being in the hospital at the same time she was, and she was. They thought they were going to get her to admit otherwise, and when they didn't, the interviewer got a little bit testy with her. She has been the one to say that she clearly remembers the birth of President Obama in Hawaii, and that's the bottom line. I mean, if he was
okay, hang on just one second, because I spoke to her for about 45 minutes yesterday.
Okay,
and Mrs. Nordyke told me that she did not know whether or not Stanley Ann Dunham was in the hospital at the same time, but that she knew Barack Obama from a very early age. Their kids went to school together at what she called one of the best high schools, or one of the best schools in America. And she told me she was too busy worrying about her own birth to worry about who else was in the hospital. So that's not
all
what
right.
I got. But let me say this, just because this is something that I found fascinating in talking with her yesterday. First of all, lovely woman. Absolutely love talking to her. Very sweet, very kind to give me some time. And what she said is that she released her documents because she thought it would support Barack Obama's position in the validity of his birth certificate. A lot of people don't realize that she's very big on sustainable development. She's very big about the global warming thing. And at one point, she worked in the same, I think it's called the East-West Foundation, at the University of Hawaii. In Stanley Ann Dunham.
Something like that. Yeah, the East-West Center.
Center. And I think Stanley Ann Dunham worked there as well, although she said they didn't interact professionally and never saw each other. Is part of that. So, yeah, I'm aware of her, but I mean, the fact is that she told me that she did not see Stanley Ann Dunham at the hospital at the same time. Her theory, now let me just lay this on the line, because again, I'm trying to be fair and impartial here. Her theory is that all the hospitals were given tablets with a list of numbers that they could assign, and she feels that because she was admitted before Stanley Ann Dunham, that her name went on the tablet first. And, of course, as you know, Stanley Ann Dunham gave birth in about 5 hours, and Mrs. Nordyke, to deliver the twins, took something like 25 hours. So the twins were actually born afterwards, even though Mrs. Nordyke got to the hospital first. Okay, you've probably heard her say that.
Okay. No, I didn't know that part. That's fascinating.
Well, that's her theory. I mean, she has nothing to back it up. It's a theory. But the bottom line is I think we're all being a little ridiculous, and I'll include myself in that, if we expect all these people 50 years ago to remember all those details with amazing clarity.
Yeah. I'm 58, I have a real hard time remembering everything that happened when I was 8 years old. You know,
okay,
it has been 50 years since then. But, this is why...
But getting back to the Facchino thing, though, I would have felt much more comfortable if she would have said, I saw the document, it had typing on it, it had handwriting on it, I verified the number, and that's that. But when somebody says it was 50% written and 50% typed, you're going out of your way.
She didn't use 50%. See, that's what I mean.
She said half.
Not using a precise language. You know, my wife and I
half.
Have disagreements all the time about her not using very precise language. And I think... Facchino, you know, she was outside in the garden and she was being talked to by the guy from, I guess it was CNN, and she just said it was half written, half typed, and I think what she meant was what we see is, if it was really 50-50, then you'd think something was wrong too, because if some of the stuff that was typed with a typewriter had actually been written in by hand, we'd all be looking at that saying, hey, wait a minute, that's information that should have been typed because it was stuff like time of birth, date of birth, you know, and she didn't mention pre-printed. I mean, maybe she should have said a third pre-printed, a third typed, and a third handwritten. And she just really wasn't being precise, and I don't think we can really take anything from that. She didn't even mention that part of it was pre-printed.
Well, it's hard to know whether she included that in the type, but I would argue even if you pulled out the typesetting on the document, it's still not 50-50 or half-half, as she said. But that's okay. That's another area where you're not concerned and I am.
Right.
So let's chalk that up to another one of those agree or disagree things. Now, one of the things, too, that I saw on at least, I think it was your under your link where you're saying that the layers can be explained and that there was no rhyme or reason to it. Again, I would argue that where there are anomalies in this document, and I know you don't think much of the PDF file, but where there are anomalies in this document, they are occurring at extremely critical points in the document. The number is critical. Whether or not it was a single birth or a twin's birth is critical. Whether or not the baby lived in the community or outside of the town is critical. Down there at the bottom where it asks, is it being signed by the mother, the parent, or other? And we see that smudge mark, which I really can't imagine why that's even there. It seems to be covering the fact that the other box was once checked. That is a critical point of the document that's on another layer. There is some very peculiar selection going on here, and I know there's some of the selection or some of the different layers aren't intelligent, but there are definitely some parts of it that are, and I would challenge you or anyone else out there listening to take this document. Specifically, take the one that the AP put out, that photograph you sent me,
right,
and then put it on a scanner, and then put a piece of safety paper in the copier the way they apparently did it, and produce anything from a layering standpoint that looks like this. It simply has not been done. The attempts to do so have looked like confetti, and there is no rhyme or reason to it. I can see rhyme or reason. Rhyme and reason in this document.
Okay.
In terms of the layering.
I have two answers to that. First of all, is we don't know if they used a piece of paper and a scanner or whether they took a photograph and used the JPEG and then ran the PDF software on that. And I have no idea which one they did.
I think the expert, you said his
my
you
other
said
response,
report. Hang on. No,
yeah.
You sent me a file. You sent me a file with this, what's his name? Zakovich. Yeah, and he actually, that's the way I think he was describing it. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, I mean, I'm always able to be wrong, but I thought as he explained this, he was saying that he's got a little four-step process in here. He was saying that it was put on the copier and then it was copied onto safety paper. I mean, that's what I got from that.
Okay.
No?
Yeah. And
no?
Then,
sure?
But my other response to that would be this. It's your own experts on your show last week said that they could not look at the, that no matter what they had found on this PDF, it didn't necessarily mean that the birth certificate was a forgery itself. And what happened, you said, I'm going to take you guys in order, and you went to Albert Renshaw, who is a very smart kid, by the way, and you said, is there any doubt in your mind that this
and
is
he
a
did
forgery,
have doubt.
That this is a forgery? And he said, there's a lot of doubts that it's fraudulent. With the long form, like I said earlier, there's a lot of things that make it look fake, and there's a lot of things that, you know, it could be real. And he said, if it's not fraudulent, it may have been built up on top of a template, but it's definitely been modified, which I'm not, you know, I mean, compressing it for a scheme, or I don't know if it's compressing it, but optimizing it for web is modifying it. And then you turn to Mara Zabest, and who was, by the way, Mara Zabest was a birther like before the election.
I think we all had
yeah.
political opinions.
And she said, I would agree with that assessment.
I mean,
you know, many people made the point that until we see the original and match the data, we can't actually tell if it's fraudulent. So there's two of your own experts on the radio.
Well, there were actually more than that. Let me add to that.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me go back to Albert Renshaw, and then we'll take on the other two. First of all, Albert did say he had doubts about the long form, but he said the short form contained elements of how they used to do it a long time ago and how they do it now, not a long time ago, but when they started, and he feels that there are some mixed elements on the short form that call it into question. So he's actually more certain that the short form has a problem than the long form.
Zabest.
You weren't here, but you listened to the archive.
I listened to that one live.
Oh, did you? You were one of our
sure.
fans. Hey, thanks. Every listener counts, right? Now, going to Mara Zabest, I've talked to her after the show, and again, her inclination is to say that the document is fraudulent. Yes, we would all like to see the original that's sitting in that binder in Hawaii, but I think we know that under no circumstances are we going to get to see that. Yes, that would be the ultimate proof. Now, let's talk about Carl Denninger. He also, and you left him out, Carl Denninger also said that every single one of these things has some type of an explanation. In some cases, maybe rather simple, in some cases maybe rather far-fetched, but he said when you add all the probabilities together, the odds of this thing not being forged are pretty small. So,
well,
yes, we've had people saying that it's not definitely forged, but they definitely think there's something going on here.
I'm not going to pick on any particular one of them, but I will say that I don't think any of them is a qualified forensic expert.
I seriously doubt.
I don't think any of them has ever been allowed to testify in court as to the authenticity.
You're wrong about that, too. Joseph Newcomer, and for anybody who wants to see it, they can go to teapartypowerhour.com/newcomer, and you can see Joseph Newcomer's certification. And he has testified as an expert in trials before, and I got that straight from him. So you can look at his certification and decide for yourself. Now, the other thing is I hate playing this game about who's got the real experts. I mean, it's an absolutely disgusting game. And let me tell you why, because when I was in college, I had a guy that was teaching me business law, and he said that every time he got sick and he went to his doctor and he wasn't well by the next day, his wife would say, honey, why don't you go see a real doctor? And he said after 20 years of marriage, the only difference he could see between a normal, ordinary doctor and a real doctor was that any doctor he picked out was just a doctor, and any doctor his wife picked out was a real doctor. And that's the way I feel arguing with the anti-birthers. Any experts I have, you know, Mara Zabest published Lord knows how many times on Adobe software. Carl Denninger been in the document business 30 years. Joseph Newcomer, if you don't think he's an expert, ask Dan Rather. I bet Dan Rather thinks he's an expert. And so people are attacking the quality of my experts. I mean, you sent me, I realize this guy you sent me here, Zadikovich. You said that report was suppressed and not put on WorldNet Daily. Actually, Bob Unruh did write an article based on that that report. But at any rate, this guy, I read his credentials. I don't think they're any better than the best. I don't think they're any better than newcomers. And he said he's been testifying on patent and document validity matters for 10 years. Hey, I'm a details guy. How many of those I don't care how long he's been doing it. I care how many times he's done it and how many of those times did he testify with was about patents and how many times did he testify about document validity. And I'm more interested in the actual numbers than how many years he's been doing it.
Okay.
So I think I've got some pretty good experts on my side, too. And every time I hear somebody on the other side saying, oh, your experts aren't really experts and my experts are experts, I think back to that attorney saying that his doctor was only a doctor, but the wife's doctors were real doctors. I mean, this is ridiculous. I've got some quality people on my side,
right, but,
and you know
it. But on the same vein, you know, I did sit and listen to the entire show last week.
Okay.
And all of them were talking about the PDF and not the real birth certificate. And
that picture isn't the real birth certificate either. Bill, it's not. That's just a picture.
No, you're
and
right.
It's flat.
None of us have seen the real birth certificate, and I don't know, maybe a real birth certificate is like a real doctor or a real expert.
The real birth certificate is sitting in the first floor of the DOH building there in Hawaii. It's in a binder.
Right.
And we could certainly see that if somebody were willing to let us see
it.
Please don't tell me.
And it doesn't have a raised seal on it. And it doesn't have a registrar's signature on it.
But it's in the binder.
Right.
It's in the binder. It's in the binder. That's the original.
Right.
A true forensic expert like this guy you sent me and like newcomer could go in there with a swab, test the age of the ink, test the age of the paper, and tell us immediately whether this thing is real. That would bring closure to this. That would bring closure. I don't think you would doubt it at that point, and regardless of the outcome, I wouldn't doubt it at that point. That we've got a president who likes playing this game. He, like you said, he spent $20,000. Most of us wouldn't put $20,000 out of our pocket if we didn't have anything to hide.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, part of it was about, you know, I still think.
What's the point? What's the point?
I think he made a huge mistake to even produce the long form that he produced.
I think he made a heck of a mistake.
As far as I'm concerned, no other president in history had to show a birth certificate in order to qualify for being president of the United States.
And no other president.
And there really isn't any credible evidence that could ever be admitted in a court that he wasn't born in Hawaii. And I told you if we had time, maybe we could talk a little bit about how ridiculous it is to think that he could possibly have been born in Kenya. But maybe we're running out of time. I know we've already gone an
hour. Hang on a second. First of all, you're saying he's making some kind of a point with this, nor the president's been asked, but there was some question about John McCain's eligibility. So let's call this
right.
What it is. Let's take off our masks.
And
call
why
this
was there a question about John McCain's eligibility?
Well, because he was born outside of the United States on a base.
Right.
All right.
Inside the United States, there's no question.
And I know.
What conservatives think, and I know what it really means. It means that anchor babies, so-called anchor babies, which is a pejorative term that means both parents are illegal aliens, and maybe one of these days an anchor baby will grow up and run for president of the United States, and then we'll find out. But as far as I'm concerned,
you know what? I'm in Texas.
I have
tons of Hispanic friends. Some have come over from Mexico. Some are third generation.
Yeah.
If an anchor baby became president one day, I would be very proud of that. I think it would be testimony to the American system, to the American dream. I think that would be great.
Well, now you know why they looked at John McCain and they said, he qualifies. And I think he has to qualify. And let me tell you a little bit more about my own background. My father went to the Naval Academy, and my grandfather went to the Naval Academy. And I come from a Navy family, and if they had told John McCain that he wasn't eligible to be president of the United States because his father was serving overseas in the Navy when he was born. I think, how would you ever get anybody to join the Navy ever again? I mean, part of being an American is your kids have at least the option of growing up to be president. And if they tell me that if I join the Navy and I get shipped overseas and my wife gets to come with me, and if she has a baby, that baby's not eligible to be president, that's an insult to all the armed forces of the United States. And that's why
we have agreement on that.
That's why it was a unanimous resolution in the United States Senate, is because they wanted everybody to understand that there's not a penalty for joining the armed forces, and there never should be a penalty for joining the armed forces. Now, the reason they didn't do that for President Obama is because he was born in the United States, and there really isn't a legitimate question about that. And all the quote unquote evidence, and I know about the Sarah Obama tape where she, you know, I can't even get into all the hearsay problems about that, but I really don't think she said she was in the hospital room when he was born. I know James Orengo, who was a Kenyan legislator, said something about Obama being born. You know, that's what they call hearsay evidence with no exception, like the official records of exception. He was not present at the time, and he knows nothing about where President Obama was born. And really, if you add up all the evidence showing that supposedly President Obama was born in Kenya, there's nothing that you could actually get admitted into court under the rules of evidence. And I suppose you know that, you know, there's about 5 or 6 or maybe 8 or 10 birther lawyers in the United States. We've got 35 lawyers on the FOGBO from all over the United States. And like I told you, one of them actually lives in Nigeria. And you know, we're not undecided about, you know, about any of this stuff. If you were born in the United States, you're a natural born citizen. And there's actually a court decision on that out of Indiana, specifically applied to President Obama. It was called Ankeny, A-N-K-E-N-Y, versus Governor of Indiana. And it was in the Indiana State Court. I will tell you that. And it was appealed to the Indiana Court of Appeals, and 3 more judges looked at it, and they all unanimously said that if you were born in the United States, you're a natural born citizen, and the citizenship of your father is irrelevant. Then it was appealed from there to the Indiana Supreme Court, and 5 more judges took a look at it and approved that. And apparently, for whatever reason, Mr. Ankeny did not appeal that all the way to the United States Supreme Court, but I can pretty much guarantee you that it would have been the exact same ruling. And so if he was born in Hawaii, he's legitimately president. This is why we do what we do without being paid by a multimillionaire who's a friend of President Obama. We're all volunteers. We don't get paid a dime.
Okay, let me give you my take. Let me give you my take on the whole Vital. Let me see if I've got my other speaker back. Hold on.
Yeah, Vital.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Actually, I can't. I'm going to have to switch to this line. Let me give you my take on the whole Vital, natural born versus native born. I personally, at this point, don't care. And let me tell you why. Because it's impossible for me to get in the heads of the founding fathers and know whether or not they were considering Emmerich Vital when they used the term natural born. Okay? I don't know. And by the time anybody figures it out, Barack Obama could be, he could be finishing his 4th term, you know, like FDR or something. Okay? So.
I don't think he can do that.
Well, I know. But the bottom line is, by the time this thing would get settled, I mean, it would be years and years and years from now, so it's not relevant. I personally don't know how you would get into the heads of the founding fathers on this, you know, are they subscribing to the Tao's philosophy? So I don't know if you've listened to my show, but I really haven't gotten into that. All right?
Okay.
But I respect your opinion on it.
I heard Corsi say it, but then, of course, Jerome Corsi actually wrote a book called The Obama Nation in 2008 and never mentioned the theory. And as far as we can tell, now we've got a scholar who goes by the name Lauren in Georgia, and as far as Lauren's been able to tell, nobody ever made this claim that both your parents have to be born in the United States, the Vattel claim, you know, born in U.S. soil to two U.S. citizens, until after the election. I believe that is correct. And of course, it does make sense. If that was really the law, I'll tell you who would have had standing to file a lawsuit about President Obama's eligibility. And that is
Hillary Clinton?
No, President Bush's Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, or however you pronounce his last name. He was the Attorney General. He was the chief law enforcement official of the United States. And believe me, this whole thing started in June of 2008. The election was in November. Mukasey didn't leave office until January 20th, and maybe sometime after that, when the new Attorney General was Eric Holder was appointed and then approved. And he easily would have had standing if he had gone to court and said, wait a minute, this guy Obama is not eligible to be president of the United States. And so that means that not only do all the 110th Congress, all the 111th Congress, all the Supreme Court, hundreds and hundreds of other judges throughout the United States, President Bush had to be in on it, Michael Mukasey had to be in on it, Dick Cheney had to be in on it. I mean, there comes a point, you know, you remember I asked you, are you a truther too?
I knew you were about to get to that, but go ahead.
Yeah, and the reason I'm not a truther is because it would have taken so many thousands of people to be part of that conspiracy. And we're Americans. We talk. We yap about stuff, and we can't keep a secret. And look at all the secrets that have come out that people did not want to come out. And I don't believe in a conspiracy theory of history. I believe in a chaos theory of history. And I think that you know, stuff happens, like Rumsfeld said, and that if there really was a 9/11 conspiracy, somebody would have blabbed it by now. And if there really was a huge conspiracy involving thousands and thousands of people to keep President Obama eligible, or to say he's eligible when he's not, it would have taken thousands and thousands of people, and somebody would have blabbed by now. That's my theory on the big picture, is that look who would have to be involved for any of this to be true.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the number is much smaller on this document than it would be on 9/11, but I do get your point. Now, one of the things, I have two more things I want to talk to you about, then I'm going to let you go because we're running out of time. You had sent me the report by Ivan Zatkovich, and you had said, that basically the conclusion he made was not the conclusion that World Net Daily would have agreed with. So even though they paid with the thing, they decided to suppress it.
In meaning that Jerome Corsi does story after story about all these other experts, Renshaw and Zabest and Denninger and Irie and Voigt, but Corsi never, ever, ever mentioned Zatkovich. And as far as we can tell, WorldNet Daily paid for the Zatkovich report. But his ultimate conclusion was that all these anomalies in the PDF are consistent with an attempt to make it more legible, not to make it a forgery. And I suppose I don't know if you heard, there's a new book coming out in 1st of September by a guy in Springfield, Missouri. It's called "Is President Obama's Birth Certificate a Fraud?" I believe the website is called ObamaBirthBook.com, and he examines 30 different claims about the PDF, and he comes to the conclusion, I believe, that none of them are consistent with it being, you know, a forgery. So
let me say a couple of things, because you threw a lot of information there.
Sure.
First of all, WorldNet Daily did discuss the results of that report. I can't see where they redacted. unredid, but it's still rolling that daily. So
and the last time they mentioned it was like 1st or 2nd of May, and they've never mentioned it ever since.
I'm going to mention it right now,
okay.
Because I've got the thing in my hand, and as I'm looking at it, I'm not sure why they would want to suppress it, because there is one instance in here where he's talking about the metadata and an irregularity in the metadata, and he says the probability of that happening, I guess naturally, would be 50-50 at best. He talks about the final assembly of the document as if to suggest that it was constructed. Let me go to page 5 of this document. He says, I know of no PDF optimization process that creates layers in the output PDF file. On page 5 also, he said, He says the multiple layers in the PDF document are a result of changes made to the images. It cannot be known, it is not known of all the changes that may have been made. Several changes are identifiable. At one point, he was explaining something, and he said this explains most of the anomalies, but he doesn't say it explains all of them. To be honest with you, if I were Jerome Corsi or Joseph Farah, I would have no problem publishing this because, frankly, I think most of it supports our camp. I don't know why they would suppress that.
Okay,
I mean, I've looked at it, and I've seen numerous statements that support our side and raise questions.
I don't remember the third guy's name, but go to the Fogbo someday. You don't need to be a member of Fogbo to read almost anything on the forum. And there's a thread called a good old fashioned debunking. So if you search for the word fashioned and debunking, it will pop right up. And the first 4 videos, their YouTubes in that thread are by the guy who's writing this new book that's going to come out in September. Further on down the thread are 2 videos by a guy who takes his own birth certificate, runs it through the court's Mac, the Mac software, and it makes more layers.
That's one of the things we noticed. My experts pointed that out, that whenever you do that, you actually get a lot more layers than we saw with this particular document.
Right.
Okay. Now, again, I don't know that he's – I'll have to look at it to see whether there's any intelligent selection going on, but I'll look at it and I'll let you know what I think. I think I'll do that. Since
my ultimate answer now, you know, to anything about the PDF is the PDF is not – you know, I agree with you. We're never going to know until we see the actual document, and who knows, maybe someday somebody who actually has a right to see that document will see it, will ask for it. I don't think I can ask for it, and no court is going to let me take a look at it, and Orly is going to find out tomorrow morning that no court is going to let her look at it. Now, what's the one word that I never said this entire show?
I don't know.
Racist.
You said a lot of words.
I have never said the word racist.
And I appreciate
a reason,
that.
And there's a reason for that. I'm not trying to make anything into a case about racism. I think that
that makes you different among the anti-birthers because we get hit with that a lot.
I understand that, and that's why I never said that, and I knew it would just, you know, it seems somewhat outrageous to me to say that unless you have proof. But let me tell you, one of the reasons why people bring that up and say that is that one of the ways that they used to keep black people down in this country in the bad old days when I was just a boy, and you know, now I'm living in North Carolina. In 1970, there was some serious racial violence in North Carolina. And I was, didn't live here then, but, you know, I was 18 in 1970. In any event, one of the ways they would keep black people down was by demanding identification all the time. And you will see stories, one of the people we interviewed on Reality Check Radio They said their grandfather had been locked up for 22 days because he wasn't carrying identification when he was walking down the street of his own town. And so the reason a lot of people want to think that this is about racism is because we're demanding things from President Obama that we've never demanded from a white president. His kindergarten records, for God's sake. His legal records from when, you know, which you can never get for any lawyer, from when he was a private attorney working for a private law firm.
Okay, I get your point on that, but
yeah.
At the same time, we looked at John McCain's eligibility, and he's white. And let's.
Yeah.
I started to say something earlier, and I didn't.
Well, we didn't last to see his kindergarten records.
Well, I agree with that.
This is one of the reasons.
And in Alaska, Democrats tried to get Sarah Palin in trouble because she took a picture with a fish. I mean, there's ludicrous stuff going on both sides. But let me address something as far as what this really is, because I don't think anybody has had the guts to come out and say it. What this is someone trying to eliminate a formidable opponent from being able to run again. All right. So let's just call it what it is. Now, before I apologize on behalf of conservatives, I have to say that Barack Obama is pretty good at playing this game himself. I mean, we all know how he won his first election in Illinois as far as the person getting kicked off the ballot. We also know
that he didn't have anything to do with that.
Oh, of course not.
The guy's ex-wife released her divorce records where she had
No. I'm not talking about the divorce records yet. I was talking about that whole thing with the signatures on the petition not being right when he ran for office the very first time. Now, as far as the divorce records go, in one of the cases, both parties were trying to keep the records sealed, and they somehow mysteriously opened up. But that's okay. All I'm saying is both sides play this game. Somebody told me if you go through history, there are probably 75 cases of someone trying to get their opponent declared ineligible.
And politics is not patty cake. No,
that's right. Now, Bill, if you think this issue is dead, watch what happens if Bobby Jindal or, let's say, Mark Rubio tries to run.
I've seen it already.
If you think this issue is dead, wait until they try
to run. There's a birther blog called Dr. Kate's View. And she has specifically come out and said Marco Rubio can't run for president and Bobby Jindal can't run for president. But that's all Vattel stuff. Both of them were born in the United States. And you're not buying the Vattel stuff and I'm not buying the Vattel stuff and we'll just have to see.
Let me say this. I'm not saying I'm not buying it. I'm saying there's not enough time for it to be relevant. And I don't care.
Well, I will agree with you on this. There's going to be more birther lawsuits filed either late this year or next year when it comes time to start doing primary season and all that other stuff. And I understand fully. I mean, heck, the truthers have not gone away. The birthers are not going away. And so I'll tell you what, I know we're running out of time. Let me think about whether or not I'd be willing to talk to Jerome Corsi on your radio show. With Ed Hale, I really wasn't. And by the way, Ed Hale came into our chat room on PolitiJab one day and said that he thought 90% of the birthers were just racists who could not stand the fact that we have a black president. But Ed Hale's kind of a character. I used to call him the emotional roller coaster of the birthers because he.
Okay, wait. We've got time for two more quick things. First of all, you mentioned the guy that's writing the book. I've already had some of my experts call me because they've looked at those videos, and they said he's using PaintShop Pro for crying out loud. That's what I use because I'm too cheap right now to spend the money on Photoshop.
I use Gimp.
Okay, PaintShop Pro is not the program of choice by experts. So just by the very program he's using, he's going to have people saying, this guy's an expert and he uses PaintShop Pro?
Okay.
I mean, I'm just telling you to expect that. I'm just telling you to expect that because you and I both know.
I'll look out for that.
All right, PaintShop Pro is a poor man's Photoshop, and everybody found it a little amusing that someone using
GIMP
that.
GIMP is the poor man's Photoshop. GIMP is completely.
What is?
It's called GIMP. GIMP.
Okay.
It stands for the new spelled GNU Image Manipulation Program, and it's basically got all the features of Photoshop, but it's open source and it's free. So just put GIMP into Google, and you'll get a great graphics program free of charge.
Well, you know what? I appreciate that advice, and I'm sure my listeners do as well. One last thing, because this sort of ties into some of the stuff that's gone on legally as well. You have an article posted on The Fogbo,
right,
where you're saying that you were able to get a copy, legally get a copy, of Eisenhower's birth certificate, and even though, where was he when he applied for it?
We've corrected that now. It turns out.
Oh, have you?
It turns out that he was actually in Palm Springs, California, when he applied
right
for that. And I don't know, maybe he was playing golf. You know, I know he was a really dedicated golfer. And
okay.
But yes, we at first we thought that he was living in Pennsylvania and got a California birth certificate number, and it turns out that we were wrong about that, and we've been there were posts within the last day or so, at least
I guess. Well, I downloaded this several days ago, about a week ago.
Yeah,
I did not see the correction.
It turned out we did a little bit more detective work, and he was living in Palm Springs, California, and so he got a Palm Springs Social Security number. And I heard you last week kind of scoff at our thing, which is that it may have been a clerical error by government employee.
I stand by that. I don't back away from that. The man's whole life seems to be a history of clerical errors. You know, I mean, his mom's passport,
we can
travel records.
Disagree on that. But the thing about, you know, what the bottom line on that is, I mean, he's been using it since way before he was president. And let's talk about,
of course.
And the theory that Orly Tates will tell you is that using the same techniques that Bill Ayers used, that he went around to graveyards and found the names of children who had died before their first birthday, and used that to get a birth certificate and then he got this Social Security number in 1977 when he was 15 years old.
I'm aware of that.
In 1977 he was 15. Now I will tell you, I was in court, in juvenile court one day in California. And they brought in a 33-year-old guy, and they said, we just picked this guy up on a warrant for a crime he committed when he was 17 years old, not 15, 17. And the judge looked at him and said, he's 33 now. Do you really expect to prosecute a guy for something he did when he was 17 years old? And he threw the case out and told him, and the poor probation officers who were standing in the court said, Your Honor, we have 15,000 outstanding warrants for people that are over 21 years old. And the judge just kind of looked back at him. Now, are we really going to, you know, let's assume that somehow President Obama committed a crime by getting that birth certificate number, which I seriously doubt is ever going to pan out. But
if it does, go ahead. We'll roll with
it. What are we going to do? Send him to juvenile court?
Well, I don't know. I guess the question would be, how old was Barack Obama when he held the press conference and announced to the world that that was his birth certificate?
But see, Hawaii says that's his birth certificate. They're the ultimate authority.
Maybe somebody in Hawaii needs to go to jail, too. Maybe we need to have a whole parade of people in orange jumpsuits with
tests. Yeah, and if that's true, then all of Congress needs to go to jail and all the Supreme Court.
No, they don't, because there's nothing in the law, sir, and you know this as an attorney, there is nothing in the law that requires an actual vetting. See, that's the whole hysterical thing about all of this. The President of the United States is required to be a natural-born citizen, but nobody is required to actually vet. Who's required to vet? Show me in the law where it says
anybody
in Congress has to vet.
No, nobody, and you want to talk about the founding fathers. When they were around, people weren't born in hospitals, and they didn't have certified birth certificates. They never thought about vet who would vet somebody in the year 2008.
I don't think they were thinking about it, although frankly I wish they had. Now, one thing I want to point out about the Eisenhower Social Security number is, you know, regardless of where he was at the time, you said he was in Palm Springs or whatever, I'm reading a clip off the Social Security Administration website, And it says area members assigned prior to 1972, and I believe based on the document you posted on FOGBO, it was the early 1960s whenever he applied for this thing.
No, so it was 77.
No, not Obama. Eisenhower.
Yeah. Eisenhower.
Eisenhower actually applied for his before 72. It was in the early 60s that Ike applied.
Right.
And it says that documents applied for prior to 1972, the prefix, it says in fact the area number and the SSN corresponds to the resident, let me go back and read this. Oh, since 1972, it corresponds to the resident's address. Okay,
right.
But prior to 1972, and I'm reading this word for word now, it's an indication of the SSA office which issued. So regardless of where he lived in 1961 or 62, whenever he applied for this, the only thing that that number is going to tell you is which office issued it.
Which
okay?
means,
they didn't start
which means
on where the resident lived.
I mean, just using common sense on that, that means that they issued blocks of numbers to each various different states, because otherwise, how could California make sure that they weren't issuing a number that belonged to that somebody else, other state was issuing the same number?
No, I agree with that. But what I'm saying is where he lived in 1961 isn't relative to the actual number that he received. It's only after 1972, like Barack Obama applied for his in 1977, that the number was supposed to correspond to the place in which they lived. So even if Ike Eisenhower hadn't been in Palm Springs whenever he went living in Palm Springs when he applied for this thing, it wouldn't matter because it was based on where it was issued, not on where the actual applicant lived.
All right. Well, we're never going to settle that one. And Orly.
Oh, sure we are. It's posted on the SSA website. It's nothing to settle. It's
I
word
know,
for
but,
word.
You know, like I said, we think that. I mean, you know, the zip code he was living in, if you transpose the 9 for a 0, it was a Connecticut zip code.
Oh, there's only one little problem with that. Susan Daniels took those numbers and put zeros in front of all of them to see if they would transfer over to Connecticut, and two of them were zip codes that were never, ever used by the state, and one of them was an APO for people in the military, and I don't believe anybody in Obama's family was in the military, so not anyone of those could have been a mistake of someone mistaking a 9 for 0, not one.
There's really a problem there. You know, the Social Security Administration has hundreds of people, and you would think that one of them would come out and say, you know, yes,
We're sticking with the clerical error thing.
Even if I'm wrong, we're going to have to prosecute him in juvenile court. And that's not going to happen either.
I don't care if I've not practiced law. I disagree with the thing about juvenile court. If you stand up in front of all these people and say, this is my birth certificate, and you know it's not your birth certificate, regardless of what the state of Hawaii has said, and you're 50 years old, you're not going to be tried in juvie.
Okay.
We both
okay.
know that.
Yes, that's true. But we were talking about the Social Security number, not the birth certificate.
Okay, fine. So then we'd have to get him in juvie court because in 1977 he was how old? 16?
15 years old. He was about to get a job working in an ice cream shop during the summer between 2 years of high school.
Well, listen, if this really isn't his Social Security number, then it raises questions a heck of a lot bigger and than the minor nonsense that would go on taking him to juvie court.
You know what? I don't think it is his birth certificate anymore. Do you know about the record that Orly Tate flashes around saying the birth certificate was never issued?
I have not seen that.
Oh, okay.
But I'll take your word for it.
You know, we do pay a lot of attention to this stuff. And Orly, one of these days, is going to have to make up her mind. Because half the time she says this is a number that was issued to somebody who was born in the year 1890. And then she'll turn around.
Right.
She does have a document that a guy named Colonel Gregory Hollister, who was the plaintiff in Hollister v. Sotora that I mentioned earlier.
Okay, talk fast. It's going to shut us off.
Okay, and he got this document saying that the number hadn't been issued, and what we think happened is because it was so widely publicized, they took that one away and gave him a brand new one. but that's just our speculation.
Okay, okay.
Right, look,
very, 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 very quickly, the only person I know that's ever been born in Hawaii that has a death certificate that doesn't have a birth certificate is Virginia, what is it, Sunara?
Right, Sunahara.
Or Sunahara. That's the only person I know that was born there that has a death certificate that doesn't have a birth certificate. I do believe that there's something in that file. I just want to see what the heck it is.
Well,
listen, Bill, we're out of time. It's a hard break. I can't do anything about it. I'll tell Jerome you're considering it.
Okay. Hey,
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillard.